Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Lawrence. I'm an alcoholic. And now to tonight's final speaker. He needs no introduction. Wayne, please.
My name's Wayne and I'm an alcoholic. And thank you for the first three speakers. And like Demi's just said, it's been a very interesting and an exciting few months when we've had probably the best known AA speakers from all over the world at our group. But for me, it doesn't get any better than our very own Jelilah, Jay from the Inbetweeners, and Herman Munster. I mean, they were just fantastic tonight. And, I mean, you know, I've been at this group for 26 years, and it's taken 26 days on Zoom going through the galleries to realize that we just look like a holding pen for the Jeremy Kyle show. I mean, unbelievable. It was just a fantastic group. I mean, Bill Wilson said this was a way of life which is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. And I mean, in my 32 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, I've just met some amazing people. I've made some wonderful friends. I've got just some fantastic memories. And I somehow managed to stay sober through more pain than I ever imagined. Now, I was once just riddled with fear, and I was just in emotional turmoil and conflict, and I just was full of self-hatred and self-loathing, and I felt awkward and uncomfortable in social situations. I was always just so ill at ease, and you know, the only thing that would ever make it okay would be that sense of ease and comfort, which comes almost instantly by taking a few drinks. You know, just the crack of the sound of that, just that crack of a vodka bottle or the ping of a can of a Super Tenants. And I just feel better. You know, life was better under the influence of alcohol. You know, life was better seeing life through a drunken haze, just one step removed from the world. It allowed me to be the person that I wanted to be. I just felt more comfortable. You know, I was where the party was at, from being in that place where I just felt afraid. Who wouldn't want to drink? Who would not want to drink? You know, people, you know, my parents would say to me, Wayne, you've got to stop drinking. And I would say, you know, I just want to scream at them, you know, you don't understand. When I'm drinking, I feel better. When I'm not drinking, life is dull, life is tedious, life is painful. You know, it's the turmoil, it's just too much. It's just a few drinks just brightens everything up. And, you know, I would sit in my bed set and a car would drive past outside and I would just jump out of my skin. You know, somebody would ring the doorbell downstairs and my knees would physically knock together. In a few drinks, it just seemed to make, it just leveled everything out. It's, you know, alcohol seemed to treat my alcoholism. That's really what was happening. And, I would promise, you know, my parents, my employers, girlfriends, you know, I will never, ever drink again. But I always eventually did. And it wasn't like I didn't try to stop. You know, I tried every conceivable way that I could to not drink alcohol. You know, I tried doctors, I tried counselors, I tried treatment facilities. You know, I went into a treatment center, a miserable, suicidal alcoholic. A few weeks later, I emerged a miserable, suicidal amateur psychiatrist. You know, it did nothing for me. And the last thing they said to me was, go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went to meetings every night of the week because, you know, I knew I was at a very young age, I was in big trouble. And I went to meeting after meeting after meeting. And unfortunately, I did what I saw the people around me doing. And they were not doing very much. There were a lot of bright, colourful characters that kept me coming back, but there was nothing of any substance. And I would speak in every meeting. I would share and I would whine. I would blame the world. I would blame her for this and him for that. Everybody for my problems. I would just moan and blame and moan. And sometimes I would share and I would conjure up a tear. And you know, people would come up to me after the meeting and they'd say, Wayne, that was an amazing share, gut level honesty. And I'd just go back to my bedsit and I'd just be pacing around like a caged tiger. You know, life, you know, AA was not working for me. AA, you know, 6 months in AA, and life was as bad as what it ever was, if not worse. And one day, I went to the wrong meeting by mistake, and I came across the people they warned me about, you know, keep away from them. You know, these guys were different. You know, they spoke with enthusiasm. They seemed to have a conviction about themselves. They were excited and enthusiastic about Alcoholics Anonymous. There was just something different. You know, there was depth in weight, and they had a solution to alcoholism. And I desperately wanted it. You know, in Bill's words, at long last, I saw, I felt, I believed, just came alive there and then, you know, because I'd leave that meeting and it was like the roof was on fire. Because if you're like me, it's an AA truth. If you're like me, attendance at meetings about, I mean, I can attend the best meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous week in, week out for years. I can come to the Road to Recovery group. I can go to any group, brilliant groups. I could sit in the middle week in, week out for years. But if I do not take the 12 steps, my life will get systematically and progressively worse over a prolonged period of time. I needed to take the steps. And for that, I needed to get a sponsor. And that's all these fools kept saying every week, every meeting, they would say the same things. You know, big book sponsor steps, big book sponsor steps again and again and again. And, you know, one night I thought, yes, the reason they're saying this is that because that's what I've got to do if I want to affect any change. If I want to see any significant change in the quality of my life, I would have to act on this information received. And I did. I got one of these fools to sponsor me. And my judgment when it comes around sponsorship is off key, because I would ring this old bloke up. I'd ring him up and I would say, you know, oh, she's done it again. She really annoyed me. He said, well, bless you, lad. It's a deeply moving story. Have you read your big book today? The next week, it'd be, well, bless you, lad. Your story's touched me deeply. Go and work with a newcomer. The guy just didn't seem to listen to me. The guy just didn't seem to care how I felt. I mean, obviously, in time, I realized he cared very much. He cared deeply how I felt. He was more concerned with what I was doing. And amazingly, I would do these actions. I would do all these irrelevant actions because the problem always seemed to be over here. And the solution he would give me was always over there. It seemed irrelevant to the problem. But I would take these actions, these dull, boring actions, which the other speakers have all talked about. I would do these things and my outlook brightened up. And I was beginning to see that I could actually live sober and enjoy sobriety, which was something I could never, ever have imagined before. You know, I could do this. I could have what I saw in the people around me. And, you know, I remember one day after doing these things, I called my sponsor. I'd been up to no good. And I called my sponsor and I said, oh, David, I said, you know, this is what's happened. And I remember the wonderful words that came down the phone. Bless you, lad. I'm on your side. If you're honest with me, I'm on your side. And what a wonderful feeling that was. And that's the deal I make with anybody I sponsor. If you're honest with me, I'm on your side. And so David, he eventually died. He died sober, had a heart attack. And I had to get another sponsor, which was, you know, I knew I needed a sponsor. You know, I needed to be sponsored. I needed to allow myself to be sponsored, more importantly. So I needed to get somebody else. And I had a couple of temporary sponsors for a while. It was less than perfect, really. And one of my sponsors came back from the World Convention and he brought a lot of tapes. And I hate AA tapes. I mean, I don't like all the circuit speaker shit. I just do not like it. And he said to me, look, Wayne, just if you're not going to listen to any of them, just listen to this one guy. So I listened to this guy and I couldn't believe it. There was this guy here, another old fool, and he was talking how in his area he was being accused of being a dictator type sponsor, and he had a right wing group of step Nazis in Los Angeles. And I couldn't believe it because I was already being called a dictator type sponsor, and I had a group full of spiritual hooligans already. It was the first time I identified with somebody in AA because of their recovery. But wow, this is incredible. So I started calling this guy. I'd ring him up every week and he started sponsoring me, and I'd ring him up. I'd never met him. I didn't know what he looked like. 6 months later, after still ringing him week in, week out, I was about to meet this guy and somebody said, he's over there. So I went over to see him and I said, hi, I'm Wayne. And he looked at me and had this like blank expression on his face. He said, I'm Wayne. I've called you every week for 6 months. You sponsor me. He just looked me in the eye. He put both hands on my head and said, you'll never drink again, kid. And off he went. Now, I'd have been forgiven for thinking, screw you. I'm not going to put up with that. You know, I've never put up with that. You know, I would break no control from man or God. I would try and protect my inner integrity. I wouldn't listen to the police. I wouldn't listen to the referee on the football pitch, my employer. I wouldn't listen to anybody. And yet, why should I take this shit off a sponsor? But by the time I'd got to my seat, which was no more than 20 yards away, I processed this in my mind. There is perhaps not another living soul on the planet today that I will listen to. This is working for me. I do not need to be frivolous and pally-pally with my sponsor. I just need to listen to my sponsor. And I mean, the best description of sponsorship that I've ever come across, it's actually nothing to do with sponsors. It's a long drawn-out story, but it's just I just like it. Maybe the newcomers will. It's there's Bill Wilson was in the AA clubhouse in New York, and he said he could hear the rain coming down on the old tin roof. I mean, I don't know about you, but in the 1930s, the rain in an old New York clubhouse, I just got these romantic images of all the reflections of the neon lights and the puddles. It just sounds great. He's in there, he said the janitors came up. He had a hard day, and Lois was away. He was laid on the bed. The janitor knocked on the door and said, Bill, another one's just turned up. Do you want me to send him away? And Bill says, no, let him come up. And he said he heard this guy coming along the hallway, and he was struggling. He was laboring. He sounded like he was in so much pain. He opened the door. This guy came in. He had a long black coat on, a scarf and a hat. So he took the hat off. He took the scarf off. He could see a clerical collar. He said the guy radiated a grace. There was something about his eyes. I mean, that man was Father Edward Dowling, who became Bill's spiritual sponsor. The reason I tell that story is Edward Dowling was in New York, and he said he was watching some people and they were ice skating. Bear in mind, this was a guy who, it's well known, he was crippled with arthritis. He was a man in a lot of pain. He could hardly walk. He could see these people ice skating. And he said they were gliding across the ice with so much grace, they made me feel like I could do the same. That is sponsorship. My sponsor wanted more for me than I ever believed I could ever attain myself. If my sponsor could do this, I can do it. You know, that's just sponsorship. Because for me, you know, with just God, because often you hear people say, oh, you don't need a sponsor, you just need God. I've taken the first step. It's a spiritual program, all about God. When it's just me and God, this is how it goes. You know, I speak to my sponsor and I say, I've met this woman. It feels right. It just feels right. He says, you know, kid, you're going to get yourself into a world of trouble. Just don't do it. Whatever you think, but just don't do it. So I go home and I'm in the front room and I speak to God. I say, God, if you don't want me to see this woman, just give me a sign. And the chandelier starts spinning around. The pictures on the wall are spinning around. You know, the windows of the curtains are blowing in and out, and there's big cracks in the wall, and it's just thunderous. It's just it's dust and shit everywhere. And I'm stood there. It goes quiet. And I just say, any old sign. Because when it gets like that, I may as well be sponsored by a magic mirror. Mirror, mirror, on the wall, who is the fairest of them all? And that gets me into trouble. That gets me into deep trouble. That broad, bright highway that I was hop, skip, and dancing along becomes narrower and narrower and narrower until it becomes a cold, dark tunnel, and I'm crawling, and all you can see is the glow-in-the-dark AA ejector cord. You call your sponsor and he says, well, you're in the shit, kid. Just stand up, two steps to the left, four steps forward, keep your head down. So I stand up, take two steps to the left, five steps forward, and bang my head. The glow-in-the-dark ejector cord is still there. You know, every part of me, just run. It's too painful. Just run. Leave. You ring your sponsor. He says, okay, kid, one step to the right, five steps forward, jump. Call me next week. And you do what he says. And slowly over time, by taking the action, things start to brighten up again. And you learn some AA truths. I've just said it. Time. Because people, for somebody like me, people say this a lot. Just give it time. Just give it time. It all gets better in time. If you're like me, time does nothing. It's dependent on what I do in the time. I had to continue to take the actions. I did not change the game plan. Just keep marching regardless of how I feel. I mean, my sponsor says of all the things he's learned in over 60 years of AA experience is that sometimes we really do believe that our case is different in that none of you people understand. Nobody else understands. You know, my circumstances are different. You manufactured all your misery. You know, my case is different. Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the greatest of them all? That's all that is. And I mean, another example of that, you know, Bill Wilson, again. I mean, because regardless of how I feel, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, I have to continue to take the actions. I just take the actions regardless. Sometimes we've got to crawl along the road, but we just take the actions regardless of how we feel. Bill Wilson, again, he was obviously always working very hard, because it says in AA Comes of Age, he came home from work, and he actually says, he uses this phrase, he says, I was sore, he was pissed off. He actually says, I was in far from spiritual mood. You think about that. I felt in far from spiritual mood. 30 minutes later, he'd wrote the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's pretty good going for somebody in far from spiritual mood. Now, we are not responsible for the results. We just got to continue to take the actions as best we can, again and again and again. I mean, I've got this, I'm fascinated with the military. I've never in the military, but I'm just fascinated with the military. You know, you see on the telly or in the newspaper, you see this, somebody's been awarded a medal. They've got these really heroic acts of bravery and under fire, and that you think, wow, how did they do that? You know, how did they do that? That was just, I mean, I'd be under the, you know, how? Invariably, you read or you listen, whatever, on the telly, whatever. And at the end, they say, you know, how did you do that? We trusted in our training. You know, I trusted in my training. And that's what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous. We get into good habits early. You know, all the previous speakers have mentioned it. We get into those good habits early, those basic disciplines. And over time, it's because, it's like, I mean, I was speaking to somebody a while ago. I mean, he's quite famous. He was he wrote the book Bravo 2.0. And I said to him, look, how important is your training? And he said to me, repetition, repetition, repetition. We can't make those life-saving decisions until we've got the basics right. So in AA, when all hell breaks loose and things are falling down around me and people are really annoying me, things are not going the way I want, and it just feels like my AA rug's been pulled out from underneath me, I just trust in my training. Just keep taking those basic actions that we were shown, those actions which brought us to a place of comfort in the first place. And that's worked wonders for me. It says in the book, if we fail to perfect and enlarge upon our spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for other people, we would not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If we did not work, we would surely drink. Now, I mean, So we have to grow spiritually. And the thing is, I mean, the way I see it is my relationship with God is simply a reflection of my relationship with people, the people around me. And it's in a group like this, I mean, it's just so easy to just, because it's structured and it's disciplined. And don't get me wrong, this is great for new people and it's great for people who really are in the shit. But when that's not the case, and we are trying to perfect and enlarge our spiritual life to try and grow in effectiveness and understanding, as it describes in the book, it isn't enough just to go gratitude list, tick, read my big book, tick, called my sponsor, tick, just a today card. That isn't enough. Where I have to work at deserving sobriety, where I really have to pay the price, where the work really counts, is when I'm in a room with people with different religious beliefs, with different political beliefs, when there are people who are just brilliant sharers and there are people who are dull, when there are people who are popular and there are people who are less popular, when there are people who have been sober a week, a month, a year, and people who have been sober 20, 30 years, is I try to show love and kindness, tolerance and compassion, all these principles. And the thing is, there is a special place in the world where wasters and misfits, flawed and imperfect alcoholics can at least begin to try to practice these principles. And that place is called the Road to Recovery Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. So regardless of what is going on around me, I just continue to try and do those things which I've done at the beginning. You know, regardless of what's new, cool, trendy, I just keep doing what I've always done. I try my best to be the best example that I can be. It's not always been a great one. Sometimes it's been a terrible one. Just trying to do the best that I can, try to help people and just to keep walking the road. And I think I'm going to finish then. I just want to say to the Road to Recovery Group, thank you so much for 32 years of sobriety. I've loved every minute of it. When you put it all in perspective. And I'll leave it there. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Wayne.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thanks, Wayne.
Nice one, Wayne.
Brilliant, Wayne. Cheers, buddy.
Cracking stuff.
Lovely.